Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hi, this is David Maister, and this is Lessons I've Learned. This specific series of podcasts is about how to develop your business through marketing, client service, and client relationships. In this, the ninth of the series of 14 podcasts, we will continue our theme of growing relationships with existing clients by exploring the topic of cross-selling and nurturing client relationships. This episode is called Growing a Relationship. Having spent previous episodes in this series talking about giving great client service on the current transaction, we now turn our attention to nurturing the relationship. Every professional service firm I've ever encountered has had and still has the goal of cross-selling, expanding relationships with existing clients to increase the range of services delivered to the client. Yet success in this area by big firms and sole practitioners has often been limited. There's a simple explanation for this apparent failure. People have been going about it the wrong way. They're actually trying to sell. Cross-selling does little, if anything, for the client. In the traditional approach to cross-selling, firms supplying one service attempt to get their clients to use them for a possibly distinct second service, sometimes performed by a totally different group of professionals within the firm. But what does the client get from this that they couldn't get by going through a sensible selection process for that second service, independent of who they're using for the first? If there's little or no overlap in the staffing the project, why should the client care that the professionals on the second project are in the same firm as the first? The same applies even if it's just you. The client has a right to ask, what benefit would he or get from using you again, as opposed to just starting from scratch and doing a sensible search for the best person to do the next project? To say the client benefits because we have terrific skills in the second service area is beside the point. If you're so terrific, you'll win the business on the merits when the client searches for the best firm to handle that second need. What is needed here is a reason that shows the client that there'll be extra benefit from using multiple departments of the same firm, or if you're a sole practitioner, extra benefits from using you again. What might there be? Well, there are some possibilities. The most obvious is this. If the person serving the client has developed a significant understanding of the client's business, and can share that experience in such a way that it makes the second team of people more effective or efficient, then the client can clearly benefit. Notice that in a firm environment, this requires teaming across internal firm boundaries and sharing the client knowledge, which doesn't always happen. It requires that the original professional must be actively involved still by helping the new team in such a way that it benefits the client. What therefore should be pursued is not an engagement for some other professional to work on independently, but some form of joint project. Firms should not be asking their people to, quote, sell your partner, but they should be looking for ways for partners in different disciplines to work together. There is thus a critical distinction between traditional cross-selling, where there is no overlap in the delivery of the two services, and what I'll call integrated selling of joint multidisciplinary services, where the client has a chance to receive extra value. Pure cross-selling is hard to justify, but integrated services have a shot at working. Now, many professionals and firms have developed client service plans to grow their relationship with the target client. However, problems still remain. Too many client service plans are not really about giving service at all. They're sales plan. Part of the problem is in the very phrase itself, cross-selling. What many professionals still fail to realize about selling, particularly selling to existing clients, is that clients expect us to earn their follow-on business. For example, to take one tactic, how many professionals volunteer to attend, at no charge, an internal client management meeting just to be available to the client in case something comes up that the professional can help on? Or to offer to critique for free a client's internal study as a gesture of good faith? How many demonstrate a willingness to earn the next piece of work and not take it for granted? The answer is very few. Unfortunately, the average professional doesn't demonstrate much interest in the client's business. As a litmus test, I frequently take a poll of professionals that I'm talking to and ask how many regularly read every issue of the trade magazines of the top one or two clients that they serve. It's the rare firm where the proportion of professionals that do this exceeds 10%. And it's hard to be convincing to a client that you care about his or her business when it's evident that you're not putting in the time to keep up with what's going on in their industry. A truly effective client service plan to grow a relationship would include a set of activities which would help the professionals get to know their client's business better in an organized way. A good client service plan would also include activities to deepen the business relationship by expanding on the amount of client contact on and off the current assignment. As an example of a creative approach to this, consider the practice of one major consulting firm. Every 2 weeks, all those working on an individual client project get together to discuss what each team member, from the most senior partner to the most junior associate, has learned about what is going on in the client's business since they last met 2 weeks ago. New entrants quickly learn that when they're assigned to a client project, they have two responsibilities: to execute their technical tasks and to learn as much as possible about the client organization, because every 2 weeks you've got to stand up and report something new that you've learned. Even the most junior member of the staff quickly learns that they should be establishing relationships with their counterparts in the client organization and expressing an interest in the client's business. Not surprisingly, this firm has an outstanding track record of expanding its client relationships. And as a not so coincidental side benefit, this attention is usually received by the client not as oppressive, but as a welcome, flattering interest in their business. The paradox is that clients do want their firms to market to them. In the numerous client panels I've moderated for different professions, I always ask clients how they feel about their outside providers giving them suggestions for new assignments. The answers from clients are almost uniform. Clients tell me that they not only welcome their providers bringing new ideas, they actually expect it. They want their outside advisors to keep them appraised of things that they should be considering. What they don't want is a hard sell on everyone. The clients say things like, "If there are additional things your firm can help my company with, of course I want to hear about it. We have a mutual interest in doing anything that helps my company. So keep those ideas coming. Just don't expect me to buy every time. Service me, don't sell me." What do these clients say they want advisors to do to grow the relationship? Here are some of the most commonly expressed client suggestions that I've heard in my research. Clients say, "Make an impact on our business. Don't just try to be visible. Do more things on spec." In other words, invest your time on preliminary ideas in new areas. Number three, spend more time helping us think, helping us develop strategies. Lead our thinking. Tell us what our business might look like 5 or 10 years from now. Jump on any new piece of information we have so that you can stay up to date in what's going on in our business. Use our own data, which you probably have since you're working for us, to give us an extra level of analysis for free. Ask for the data. Don't wait for us to come up with the idea and give it to you. Schedule some off-site meetings together. Join us for brainstorming sessions about our business. Don't charge us for that. Do it for free, but the odds you'll get interesting future business are pretty good. Make an extra effort to understand how our business works. Sit in on our meetings. Notice that's a big one that the clients almost always mention. Help us see how we compare to others, both within and outside our industry. Tell me what our competitors are doing and why they're doing it. Discuss with us other things we should be doing. We welcome any and all ideas. Now notice what many of these suggestions have in common is that they're about expending serious effort on getting to know the client's business and industry in great depth, and being proactive in offering suggestions for improvement. And that's what the clients are asking for. But it's also clear they want a business partner, not a false friend. The good news is that clients clearly do want us to bring us new ideas, and they do want a relationship. The process must begin with the identification of the key client prospects you are going to target in your existing client base. It's not true that you market to all existing clients. The essence of trying to grow a relationship is trying to find those clients who, A, you can care enough about to feel you can invest in the relationship, and B, find a client who's going to respond to that investment. You can't love everybody, and not everybody's going to love you. So you must choose very carefully which relationships you try to grow. Once you've identified which key relationships you're going to try and grow, it's a good idea to establish a time budget for each account to figure out how much investment it's going to be worth to try and grow this relationship. It's kind of like dating. You must invest a little bit and find out whether or not the other person reciprocates. And if you do, then you keep up the investment. And if they don't reciprocate, then you decide that there's no love affair coming out of this one and you move on. But you need to go in with a sense of how much am I prepared and how much does it take to invest in growing the relationship. An advantage of having a time budget is it provides a vehicle for you and any other member of your team to get involved with the business development effort. For example, junior members of your team, subject to approval of a team level, could possibly charge time to your marketing budget if you've actually established one for developing the account. Without such accounts, it is often difficult to get junior staff members who are subject to personal billability targets to engage in these non-billable tasks. The potential role of junior members of the engagement team in the marketing effort to marketing to existing clients needs to be stressed. They often have more frequent and direct client contact, especially in the research and interview stages of projects, than more senior professionals do, and are often in a better position to pick up the signals and clues that the client organization has additional needs. Here's a way to figure out how much time you might want to consider investing in a key relationship. Do it on the principle of equivalence. Start by saying, how much is a new job that you might land from the new client marketplace typically going to be? What's the size of the typical new client job? Then ask yourself, how many non-reimbursed hours typically would be spent from soup to nuts trying to win a new client job from the time you heard about the opportunity, from the time that you went out to interview the new client, went home, researched the client, wrote a proposal, rehearsed a presentation, did the presentation. Figure out how much time you would spend chasing that average size project. Then say to yourself, what would the equivalent be in the existing client situation? Do they have new jobs which are of the same size as a new client? And do we have the same amount of time budget that we would expend getting the same revenue equivalent amount on the existing client side as we do on the new client side? Notice we're arguing here for logic, not to be inspiring. Quite simply, put your time where you're going to get a return. As a result, what you'll find is you may have something like 50 or 75 hours that you can afford to attempt to spend trying to grow a relationship. And remember what the principle is here. You must spend those 50 to 75 hours not selling to the client, but using that time to maximize the chance that the client's going to hire you by earning and deserving their business. Successful marketing to existing clients, relationship building, has three stages, none of which may be omitted. The first is one we've covered in previous episodes, which is making the client disposed to use us again, making sure that we're doing a wow job on the current transaction. The next level is increasing the firm's capabilities to serve the client, making sure we do earn and deserve the business. And then finally, uncovering the new opportunity to be of value. The first element, making the client disposed to use us again, is probably the most critical stage of the process. We've discussed in previous episodes this process of super pleasing. Even though we've discussed this issue of super pleasing before, notice that it becomes relevant again in the area of growing a relationship, because if you've got a budget to get the next job, then you do have some time available to add into the budget for the current job to increase your ability to go the extra mile. In building the relationship, volunteering to attend the client's internal meetings is, as we've noticed, a particularly powerful tactic. Let's explore it a little bit more. Suppose that a client service team learns that a client is holding a national meeting of all of its branch managers on a topic that's not covered by the team's current engagement. The team leader could approach the client and say, "Would you like me or one of my partners to attend the meeting free of charge just to be a resource to you? I promise you that many, if not most, clients would accept such an offer. And there you are, sitting in the client's meeting, watching them debate their issues. You can hear what they're arguing about. You can hear what they want to attack. You can hear what they're in agreement on, even if they're wrong. You can hear what they're fighting about. Let me pose a very simple but very important question. How good at selling do you have to be in that situation? I hope the answer is clear. You actually need no sales skills whatsoever. You need the ability to shut up and listen, and your client will tell you what the next job is going to be. All you've got to do is be willing to invest in the relationship. Next, notice what happens. Three or four times during that meeting, that client's going to say, well, you said you wanted to give your time to us to be available and help us. What does your experience say on those issues? Now, you may not always have the answer, and if you don't know the answer, integrity always comes first. Your answer is, I don't know the answer to that one. But I've got a friend or a partner who's in another office, and I can get you the reply within 24 hours, beloved client. Tell me how you'd like me to respond. I can have my friend or partner call you. I can have him or her write you a memo, or I'll get the answer within 24 hours and get it to you. Tell me how you'd like me to deliver it to you. I'll get you the answer. Now again, let me pose to you this one question. How good at selling do you have to be to do that? And of course the answer is again, you don't need sales skills. You get the opportunity to demonstrate that you can add value by the three or four times they ask you for your input. In terms of getting new business, there is perhaps no other tactic which has greater return on time invested. A similar principle is at work is if you offer to critique a client's documents. You find out they are working on something and you offer politely to say, I don't want to push my nose in where I'm not wanted, but if you want me to donate the time to review your documents, I'll happily do it as a favor for free. And in some percentage of the time, the client's going to say, sure, we'd love your input. And then they give you the other issues they're working on. Again, I'm going to pose my silly but important question. How good at selling do you have to be when a client shares with you all the details about their next challenge? There is no better way to build a relationship than to find some way to be helpful or useful to the other person. To get a favor, one must first give a favor. Do something for the client free of charge that demonstrates both caring and a commitment and gives you a chance to demonstrate your expertise. There is good news in all of this. Cross-selling and growing relationships can be made to work. But firms must recognize that cross-selling is like a PhD program. There are milestones that must be passed before you are eligible even to try it. First comes the bachelor's degree program of conducting the current assignment in such a way that the client is not only satisfied but delighted. The client must be left thinking, not only did they get me a good result, but it was delightful to work with them. It should be obvious that there's no point trying to generate more work from existing clients unless you have left them eager to work with you again. Next comes the master's degree of investing in the client relationship that we have discussed in this episode, so that the firm is visibly seen by the client as trying to earn and deserve their future work, doing things for them to earn trust and demonstrate ability. The emphasis here is on investing, not selling. If we have delighted the client on the current job and clearly been seen to be willing to invest in the relationship, then and only then can we turn up and say, our knowledge of your situation suggests that you really ought to look at X. You really ought to look at something in addition. May I bring in my specialist partner to talk to you about this? Unfortunately, professionals and firms have historically neglected the earlier stages and just show up and say, do you want to buy something? Of course, the only possible answer to that is no thanks. Too many cross-selling programs start with what we've got and try and push that onto the client. To be effective, growing relationship must begin with a deep understanding of the client's business and an educated, up-to-date knowledge about what problems or issues the client has. And by the way, a little bit of sincerity, a true desire to help, wouldn't hurt. I'm David Maister, and this has been Lessons I've Learned. Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, go to my website, davidmaister.com, where you'll find many other resources covering these and many other topics.